Hi, I'm Stargate Pioneer.
And I'm Steven Jondrew, and we're from Better Podcasting, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of the individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I like it with the helmet on.
And Keir Hansen.
And that's why, to this day, I can't eat cotton candy.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 176 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we take the stories that we all know and love, the ones we rewatch and memorize, we quote them and share them with others, and we screw them up royally in the name of mid-season boredom. Because if you love something that much, you ought to be able to dress it up in a ridiculous party hat for your own amusement, right?
Right.
I am Keir, your host this evening, and joining me, as always, my partner in time, Jay. How are you, sir?
I'm ready to have some fun.
Okay, we'll do that. And over there, already having some fun of her own, Haley, welcome back.
And I'm ready to ruin all of Jay's fun.
Oh, well.
Sounds okay. Business as normal.
That's fun in and of itself. What's going on this week, Jay?
All right, so this week we're going to entertain ourselves over the hiatus between now and Christmas by playing a game that we've decided to call Doctor Swap. The rules are simple, the contestants are even more simple, and as long as we all allow each other a little bit of creative license, everything should work out with 85% less lingering animosity than a family game of Monopoly. Seriously, countries have dissolved over less than that game causes, and yet they sell it to children. What's wrong with these people?
Yeah, I think there have been fewer fights over Risk. as Jay mentioned, the rules are extremely simple. All we're going to do with this one is we're going to take a series of new Who episodes, ones we all know pretty darn well. You know, we take some rather iconic ones, or ones that are good indicative episodes of the Doctor who was represented in them. And what we're going to do is I've got a D12 here, a 12-sided die I'm going to roll. And we're going to come up with a different Doctor to swap in for them. And I'm going to turn to either one of our contestants here and see how they feel that's going to change the inherent nature of the story. Just to make sure that everything is fresh in our heads, we'll go through a quick synopsis of the episode so that we can refresh ourselves on, you know, where the native Doctor fit into the original episode, and what companion or companions that they were working with, because that'll obviously play into the dynamic. And we'll just see where this goes. You kids ready to get started? Are there any questions before we get cracking?
I'm ready.
What do I get if I win?
Praise and glory, and whatever's left in this bottle of Basil Hayden's.
Sweet.
But no coupons.
Which isn't much. Yes, no coupons. You have to take your vouchers to the beer tent, and you have to get to the back of the line for every round, and no bringing up other people's vouchers. Okay, round one, we're gonna go in sort of chronological order through our modern Doctors here. So we're gonna start with the Ninth Doctor. We're gonna take Paul Cornell's story, Father's Day. As you all remember, this is a story of Pete, Rose's dad, Jackie's husband, who died back in 1987. Rose was obviously just an infant at the time, and Jackie had told her growing up that nobody was there for Pete when he died and that the hit-and-run driver was never found. So in the episode, adult Rose asks the Ninth Doctor to take her to see him alive, just to see him, but on a whim ends up changing his fate, not realizing the consequences of such a time paradox. So really, the Doctor has changed so many lives and saved so many lives. What could be the real consequences over one guy being left alive in the world who wasn't alive before? So it's a great episode for the Ninth Doctor to do a little explanation of the rules and laws of time, and a kind of an emotional roller coaster, obviously, for Rose, good paradox story, really a great one for all characters involved. So before I roll, who wants to go first?
Haley volunteers.
Haley volunteers. All right.
Thank you.
Rolling my 12-sided. Oh, this should be interesting. Okay. We've got the 11th Doctor.
Oh, God.
Okay.
So let's just take it through. We've got the 11th and Rose, fascinating in and of itself, dealing with a paradox and a family element. So probably right in his wheelhouse. What kind of changes or differences might you see happening in the story?
He walks in and he sonics everything.
Wow, it's like he's actually there.
He talks to Baby Rose, obviously. Gets the deets on the family.
Yes, because his suddenly inherited ability to talk baby. Yep.
Yeah, and we would have learned her true name, which we never learned. Just the one imposed upon her by her parents.
Which was actually Thorny Flower, because there weren't words for Rose in her native tongue. Okay.
And I feel like he might have tried to help save her dad for a little while before finally realizing that he had to let him die for the greater good.
Somehow comedically commissioning another car to try and run the other vehicle off the road in some haphazard car chase scene. Right. Yeah. Okay. I like it. Jay, would you like another crack at this episode, or would you like an episode of your own? Or actually, would I say, would you like to take a crack at the 11th Doctor?
Or a new Doctor.
Or would you like to have a new Doctor thrown into this situation?
Oh, give me a new Doctor.
Okay.
All right. Same story. Father's Day.
Right.
Rolling. You have the 4th Doctor, Tom Baker.
Oh, wow. Okay. So Rose asks the Doctor to take her to see her father, you know, before he dies. And we get 1.5 episodes of the Doctor explaining how this all goes down and why it's not a good idea before finally caving and taking her anyway. So then, you know, Rose does her thing. She runs out there and the Doctor sits there and watches her and goes, well, this ought to be interesting, before following after her and jumping into all the problems that ensue.
Okay. All right. And when the final moments occur, time plays out as it should, and everyone is horribly upset seeing Pete lying in the road at the wedding. Any final advice from the Doctor to the distraught Rose?
Oh, see, that one's difficult, because I could see it going either way. He could either have some seriously sage advice that could, you know, completely alter her life and her view on, you know, on life and death, or he would just make one quick remark, turn around and walk off and leave her to figure it out herself.
I'm actually seeing a combination of the two. It would be a two-phrase response. He'd give the sagely advice and then give some complete non sequitur that is completely unrelated to anything and walk off frame.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. Got it. Okay. Let's look here. For round two, we're going to step up. We're moving up into the 10th Doctor. And we're going to take... I decided to go with Tooth and Claw.
One of Haley's favorite episodes.
Creations here. Mixed emotions on people's reactions to this episode, but this is a great adventure episode. It's got a great comedic element between 10th and Rose as they're trying to get Queen Victoria to utter the catchphrase. And we also, you know, dealing with the werewolf story and the whole Empire of the Wolf, we have the that final little zinger at the end and the creation of Torchwood. So let's see. We'll flip it around this time. We'll keep it in this order. Give Jay a chance to recharge his brain for a second. Haley, I'm going to roll you. Oh, this should be beautiful. Colin Baker. sixth Doctor, not only dealing with Rose, dealing with the Queen, and dealing with a violent enemy. Nothing you could reason with.
Here's the thing. I have never seen an episode with the sixth Doctor in it. So maybe Jay should take this one.
I almost want to know what Haley's take on a Colin Baker reaction would be from after hearing him speak, meeting the man, getting our opinions and our discussions of him, and just general hive mind mentality towards the sixth Doctor. I just give me like a one line synopsis of how this shakes out.
I don't even know. Okay, so he walks into the room where the Queen is sitting and decides that he is king.
All right, we're on point so far.
Okay. And he decides that this whole werewolf business is just silly.
Poppycock. Utter poppycock. Balderdash.
Okay. All right. So Haley employs her pass. All right. So first we wind up getting the Sixth Doctor and Rose falling out of the, or you know, coming out of the TARDIS. The Sixth Doctor insulting Rose and her stupid assumption that they were actually going to wind up somewhere tropical, because why would he take her somewhere like that? It's clearly...
They absolutely have to come out of the TARDIS arguing. Has to happen.
I mean, it would clearly be Rose's fault for assuming that he was taking her somewhere, regardless of what he actually told her.
And it's taking every last ounce of strength from Rose not to backhand it. Okay.
So then the royal retinue comes up and, you know, they ask the doctor why he's there. And he proceeds to belittle and berate them for, you know, not knowing what was going on and being so completely clueless as to what the actual thing. He's got the whole thing figured out within the first 45 seconds of seeing the queen and her entourage.
Sure.
But decides that, you know, he needs to educate them in the process.
He has 52 minutes of bloviating to fill. So by all means, yep.
So we'll fast forward.
Plus, you know, he has always, whenever he has been around figures of authority or historical importance, he's always wanted to come across very, very prepared, very dashing, very, you know, in the know, mm-hmm. even if he had no idea what was going on. So, okay, this is good with Queen Victoria. All right. No,
so then we fast forward. There's now a werewolf running rampant and the doctor running around with everyone who's trying to survive, and they're trying to figure out a way to stop him. They get into the library. Here we go. And let's see, how does this play out exactly? They're trying to find a way to stop it from coming in. Obviously, the doors are all coded and everything like that. And the doctor says that clearly he's intimidated the wolf with his, you know, his large intellect, and the wolf understands he cannot outsmart him, so that it's trying to find some other way to handle this. And the entire time, Rose is flipping through books and finds the answer, finds a passage relaying the werewolf and the, what was it, mistletoe? Mm-hmm. And the doctor kind of pauses for a moment and goes, well, of course there's that as well. Because he's known the whole time.
Nice.
All right, so this all gets wrapped up with a very similar mechanic. We've got the telescope already prepped and ready to go, and the doctor standing in the beam and insulting the wolf to the point where it lunges at him in a rage, and he quickly ducks out of the way, and the wolf gets trapped in the beam, and we all know how it plays out from there.
Wow, quickly ducks out of the way? Colin Bay. Okay. Oh, no. Okay. Okay. I was going to say, you know, maybe something, you know, standing in the beam, his coat is so illuminated that it dazzles the werewolf into blindness. Okay.
That might work too. Yeah. He is actually part of the mechanic. His coat serves as a refraction for the beam.
Nice. All right. In keeping with variations on the 10th Doctor original episodes, we're going to move up for round three into Fires of Pompeii. I mean, come on. James Moran's classic episode, 10th dealing with repercussions of modifying time. Again, sort of similar to Father's Day in terms of saving people. What kind of repercussions can that paradox have? Fixed points in time. And just a phenomenal Donna Noble episode. So, Haley, we're going to roll for you, and we're going to come up with swapping the 10th Doctor out for, you know, I want to try to get us a roll that's going to give Haley something that she can actually work from. So let's give a doctor she knows. Okay, no, all right, I'm good with this. I'm good with this. We're actually just going to move up one doctor. We're going to stick Matt Smith in dealing with Donna Noble, which we've all been dying to see happen, wow. Really. So... 11th and Donna dealing with the impending volcano and whether or not to save Caecilius and his family.
Hmm. Okay. So they show up and he sonics everything.
Step one, tries to sonic the volcano. Doesn't work.
Okay. Now I'm trying to remember what happens in the episode at the beginning. He remarks on this oracle that looks familiar for some reason. He can't quite place it.
His memory was always really spotty. Some things he remembered extremely well. Others...
like his name.
All right, so there was the assembly of the giant circuit. There was the soothsayers going back and forth on who actually had the proper premonitions.
Okay. Okay, so first of all, we get a bunch of snide comments from Donna about how he's young and pretty. And she's not at all interested.
She probably just spends 75% of the episode just devouring.
Just nothing but snark. Oh. And then he, you know, he gets into the family villa, and I feel like he just hangs out on the couch for a while, on the little Roman stone couch or whatever.
Yeah, wearing weird little olive branches.
Yeah.
And
He's gonna have the little olive wreath thing on his head, because of course he is.
And the toga over his normal costume.
Yes.
And he'll just be reclined with a chalice of something, because he thinks it makes him look cooler. Until things actually start exploding. And then he'll be like, ooh, this is interesting.
Okay. He has to find the highest point in town so that he can have a big speech. As rocks are crashing down all around him.
And on the mount. I feel like at some point he uses the sonic screwdriver as an antenna or something. Like he just jams the end of it into the circuit.
Okay.
And that's how he resolves everything.
So does he actually come to the same conclusion to save the one family to placate Donna, or does she just strong arm him and say, look, spaceman?
I think he might have made that decision on his own to save the family.
Okay.
I can see
11th doing that. He wouldn't need to be talked into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So not a lot of arm twisting necessary. Jay, I'm going to give you the same story.
All right.
But I have rolled for you John Pertwee.
Interesting. All right.
Lots of adventure.
Yeah. So everything, we're running everywhere. Either that or pulling the Whomobile out of the TARDIS somehow.
He's banging around Pompeii and Bessie, just crashing up and down these mountain paths.
Exactly. So as soon as anyone tells him anything about what's going on, he tells them that they're incredibly stupid and primitive beings, and they don't even begin to understand what's actually at play here. When he finds out that Cacalius has acquired the TARDIS, he runs in and attacks everybody, judo chops them all, and takes the TARDIS back.
All right.
So then he now actually has the TARDIS through the entirety of the story, because, you know, screw that family over there, they stole it. So once we find out
those cads.
He finds the golem, and instead of using a little squirt pistol, he actually manages to rig up a high pressure, like fire hose system from the swimming pool in the TARDIS, and hoses it down to the point where it's no longer functioning, saves the day, but realizes that this is a fixed point in time, and thereby has to, you know, devise some sort of explosive that
he
drops into the volcano before jumping into the TARDIS and flying off to the next adventure.
Of course. Right. I'm digging that one. I'm liking that one quite a bit. And of course it involves a lot of really pseudo technology made out of habitrail sets and some leftover erector pieces. Perfect. And a bit of wire I found under the hedge. Round four, we're going to move up into the 11th Doctor's native territory. So we're going to start mucking around with our dear Matt Smith. We're going to take the Lodger, which obviously, you know, such a great Gareth Roberts piece, our first introduction to having just that endearing relationship with Craig. And obviously that strange upstairs that didn't actually exist and so forth. Just be certain, because I tend to blur them both in my head as well, that we're separating this from anything having to do with Stormageddon and Closing Time. So we're dealing just with the Lodger episode here. So a little backstory. You've got a force blocking the TARDIS. Amy is stuck inside it from landing, keeping it in a materialization loop. So the Doctor has to figure out what's keeping the TARDIS from being able to fully materialize, or else he's going to lose Amy. And as he does this investigation of the house with these people that go upstairs but never come back down, he has to pretend that he is an everyday muggle human and move in with Craig Owens. Okay. So Haley. Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. You're going to step this one back and put David Tennant in this situation.
Okay. I don't see David Tennant's Doctor playing football. Or maybe he tries, but he stays in the Converse and the suit, and he just takes off the jacket and he trips.
There's not good traction on wet grass.
No, not so much. Let's see.
The his ability to talk Craig off a ledge when he starts getting worked up about all of these strange and unusual things occurring right over his very head.
Mm. That he could handle. I'm trying to think. Okay, so Matt Smith's doctor provided a little love advice for for Greg. I don't know that Tennant's doctor would be providing the best romantic advice.
No. No, he really wasn't
His advice would be let her get away and then pine over her for so long that you drive the next person insane and they run away screaming because they can't take it anymore.
Find a good rainstorm to stand in.
Make sure it drips off of your nose.
Don't be sad.
Okay. Okay. All right.
No, never mind. You can't possibly handle this situation. Your hair isn't nearly as emotional enough.
Yeah. Sorry, James Gordon. You just don't have the locks.
Right. Let's see.
Oh, Jay, you're going to love your role in a second. Wrap it up, Haley. I want to get to this one.
Okay. You know, floats away in the TARDIS.
Helps him find the love within him.
Yeah. Okay. Get to Jay now.
Jay, you've been handed Paul McGann.
Oh.
The Eighth Doctor. And I will allow Big Finish Eighth Doctor.
Ooh.
Rather than just half human face snogging, I love my shoes Eighth Doctor.
Okay, give me a second here.
Okay.
This requires a little bit of thought.
Absolutely. We have had numerous opportunities to try and hear the Eighth Doctor attempt to pass as a normal, everyday Joe human in the various Eighth Doctor's adventures.
Yeah, channeling his mother's side of the family. Yeah.
Right, of course.
All right.
Never quite works.
So what happens is, the door opens, the episode starts with the door opening, and there sits our Eighth Doctor staring at Craig as if he doesn't quite know what planet this creature is from, and it takes him a moment to process it. And then we get the introduction of, yes, I'm here about the room that you have to let. And he pauses as if trying to remember who he is. And, you know, obviously distracted by something in the bushes next to the door that he's paying way too much attention to. And it drags on for an impossibly long time before turning back and saying, oh, yes, the doctor. And Craig's already put on guard. So then we see a hilarious montage of, you know, things like the doctor trying to use a fork and failing miserably at it. And, you know, trying to understand how the shower actually works, and Craig actually having to come in and show him, and it's very odd couple kind of thing going on here.
Okay.
So then we actually get to the threat of the episode, and here we have the Eighth Doctor really understanding what's going on right off the bat. He gets it, sure. He understands, and it becomes this emotional thing of, you know, understanding the villain's motivation and things like that. And trying to this moral dilemma of who is actually in the right here, because we have no investment. It's the Eighth Doctor. He sees everything equally on all sides, and he's just trying to do the best he possibly can for everyone involved. So it eventually turns out that he understands that this villain poses a real threat. Mm-hmm. And you can see the weight resting on his face as he comes to the conclusion of how to solve this problem.
Okay. All right. And because of the fact that obviously, since this is something where we're drawing heavily from the audio drama Eighth Doctor, all of this is going to have to be internal pining and dealing with all these internal emotions while uttering them aloud.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes. So everything's going to be vocalized. He's such an extrovert. All right. I like it. We're going to stick with the 11th Doctor for one more round here and take one right in the jaw with dinosaurs on a spaceship. Since we're obviously going into our new showrunner, Chris Chibnall, his episode obviously directed by Saul Metstein, and the full cast of characters along here. So you've got Amy and Rory, you've got Rydell the Hunter, you've got Nephi, Queen Nefertiti coming along, and obviously that great showdown at the end with Solomon and some of the moral quandary that didn't really become much of a moral quandary, oddly enough, for the 11th Doctor in how to deal with him in the end.
Unless we forget the highlight of the episode, Brian.
Oh, of course. Yes. Brian's log, but not Brian's log. Perfect. Haley, first Doctor.
Okay, yes. First you have to remind me how the episode ends, because I remember a lot of the middle and I don't remember the end of this episode.
Sends him off in a ship that explodes.
Okay.
Nukes him from orbit.
It's the only way to be sure.
Literally. Lana.
Okay. I feel like he's going to have a few very long conversations with Queen Nefertiti about the trials and tribulations of her queenship.
Yes, yes, yes. Of course, of course, of course.
And then Brian, my dear chap.
Oh, he's going to love Brian. Oh, my God. Those two are going to be thick as thieves.
He Brian, finally has one companion he understands.
Rydell. He's going to hate Rydell.
And I feel like he's going to send Amy and Rory back to the TARDIS because they annoy him. But, you know, they're going to wander off and do their own thing anyways.
Yeah.
They're going to get lost on the way back and get into their own adventure.
So they're going to be doing their own thing, but he's not going to be involved with them at all. Mm. So they're inconsequential at this point.
They've been completely sidelined for the remainder of the episode.
Now there's an entire subplot.
It's Brian's song now. You like that? Did you like that? It's Brian's song.
I got that.
You go sit in the corner and you think about what you did.
No, I'm busting out of that corner and flash dancing, baby.
I feel like he'll make sure that all of Rydell's weapons have some sort of unfortunate accident. And
they're all pop guns.
So he's also sidelined from the episode. And that means it's down to Brian and the First Doctor to save the day.
Wait, what happened to Nefertiti?
Nefertiti? I don't know. I guess she's still on the team, though.
I got nothing.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, she's still there.
All right. So we've got pterodactyl attacks.
Okay.
We've got the two clawed robots clonking around.
Okay, so the Doctor is quite injured by this point.
Okay, of course. Pterodactyl attacks. He's probably been knocked out at least 3 times. He spends a lot of time unconscious, yeah?
Right. Well, because we went 3 episodes and only saw dinosaurs without seeing the villain.
That's true. That's true.
Right. So now that we're 1.5 hours into the story, it's time to meet the villain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to like him. Solomon comes in, and the Doctor will have a very long conversation with him as well, suss mm-hmm. him out, figure out what he's up to, and then we'll incapacitate him by destroying all of his computers and technology and everything and leave him stranded on a rock somewhere.
Okay. All right. Takes the moral high ground. Yes. I like it. I like that a lot. Jay, you're going to take the same story.
All right.
You got all your components there. Mm-hmm. It's all fresh in your mind. I've given you Pertwee already. I'm going to roll again. Oh, nice. Oh, I was hoping this was going to happen. You've got the 12th Doctor.
Oh.
Tell me this isn't perfect.
Oh, this is a good one.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. So we start off the scene where, you know, Amy and Rory are helping Brian fix the light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
The TARDIS materializes around them. The Doctor's mid-sentence as it happens and just continues talking. You know, it all plays out very similar until the point that he realizes that everyone is there. And he stops and stares at them all, looks at Amy and Rory, and is like, who's he? They explain what happened. And he's like, you're not supposed to have people. You don't have people. You have me. Why do you have people?
Doesn't understand the whole relationship thing, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So we get Nefertiti. We get Rydell because, you know, he needs a thug.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very, very condescending about it the entire time. He spends the entire episode berating Rydell and telling him how he's, you know, clearly just muscle and no brain power at all.
I would see him actually playing up a coward angle because he goes after dumb brute animals rather than taking on, you know, a sentient adversary.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I can see that. Okay. So we're on the ship. We're figuring out everything that's going on, finding out there's dinosaurs and becoming incredibly excited about this because there's dinosaurs. How can you not have dinosaurs on an adventure? This is fantastic. I mean, for some reason, this strikes a chord with the 12th Doctor.
Okay.
So we quickly move from, you know, irritated and annoyed to overjoyed. And why isn't anyone else thrilled by the fact that we're being chased by velociraptors?
Okay.
Then we find out what happens, find out that everyone got thrown out the airlock and that it's all Solomon's fault. And then the pendulum comes back the other way. Now the Doctor is silent and brooding and you can tell things are going to end badly. We have the showdown with Solomon. The robots are quickly shut down and thrown out of the ship.
Melted for scrap.
Because okay. we can't be bothered by that. That's just no.
Sorry, David Williams.
Then, let's see, Solomon grabs hold of Nefertiti and, you know, is trying to hold her hostage. And the doctor crosses his arms and leans back because he knows what's going to happen. He's like, okay, yeah, no, you go ahead and try that. And then Nefertiti gets out of it herself, and the doctor just gets that smirk on his face, like, I knew that was going to play out that way. So
she always carries an asp in a bag under her tunic.
Then we get to the scene where Solomon is on his ship, and the doctor's about to leave him to his fate, but there is a much longer discussion, and the doctor explains exactly why he is leaving him there and how this is the correct course of action, because he has no respect for Solomon has no respect for life and therefore doesn't deserve to have one, basically. And the doctor makes sure that Solomon understands exactly why he is being left there instead of just leaving him and being like, nope, this is the right thing to do, and walking off.
Okay. All right. I would have liked if somehow Brian factored into...
I don't know how that would have played out. I know there would have been some great stuff in there, but I'm not sure how that...
I would have loved him to be the moral voice, despite his fascination with everything. I also want to make sure that the doctor has a couple opportunities to run around yelling up at the skies at the pterodactyls that are attacking him. Beautiful ladies! That's all I want. Hello! Trying to speak dinosaur to them. All right.
No, wait. He deleted dinosaur for semaphore.
That's, damn it. I knew I should have kept that one around on a backup drive somewhere. Well, let's move up into the 12 Doctors episodes and start changing things out from under Mr. Capaldi. So we're going to take Listen, Stephen Moffat's episode. Obviously, you know, the dealing with the inherent fears of children that stick with us, and the something lurking in the closet, under the bed, under the blanket. and where the common thread of nightmares actually reside. So, Haley, you are going to be handed, I think you can handle this, you've seen a few episodes, the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker.
I don't think I've seen any of his episodes.
We haven't given you any? We've given you some.
We've at least watched City of Death.
Exactly, which is a great indicative episode of his level of unpredictability, lack of maturity, Would you like a re-roll?
Yes.
You do? Yeah, let me just say yes. I cannot base my entire discussion of Tom Baker on one story. Okay. Re-rolling for Listen to a doctor that Haley is familiar with. Boy, she's really got to spend less time watching all these DC shows. And
Tell them to quit making so many.
All right. We'll let you... Okay. I'm liking the dynamic on this one. So you're taking the 12th Doctor's dissertation on nightmares and inherent childhood fears and handing that to Christopher Eccleston.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
From one spiky doctor to another. But differently spiky.
Okay, so I don't think he has the conversation alone in the TARDIS, which would kind of kill the purpose of it, I guess. But I just...
Oh, the whole fourth wall conversation? Okay.
But then at the end of that speech, he says, or am I talking to an empty room? And that's how you get into whatever the creatures might be for Listen. But I don't see Eccleston's doctor talking to an empty room like that. So I think he has to have a companion there that he's explaining this to. And then he still maybe turns to the camera.
Right.
As we go into the credits.
Okay. Yeah, he definitely, and he'd be walking much more fast-paced, frantically talking this through aloud, while someone is like trying to keep up behind him, walking two steps to every one of his kind of thing. Okay.
Yep. Okay, so...
Oh, dealing with a little young Danny Pink.
I see him acting very similarly to the Are You My Mommy kid. You know, he's squatting down a lot, very creepy smiley. Mm-hmm. Not 12th Doctor creepy smile, but, you know, 9th Doctor creepy smile.
Yeah. Creepy in different ways.
And you know what? I think when we've got the kid or creature under the blanket, whatever it is, I feel like he'd run over there and flip the blanket over because he would have to see what it was.
Yeah.
It's a much shorter episode. We finally have an answer.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't have the patience for that kind of stuff.
And, you know, roll credits.
What do you think the dynamic between Ninth and Clara would be?
I think she'd be flirting more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would.
Yep.
Which would definitely put a strain between her and Orson Pink, but Orson wouldn't know why. She would just be very short with him.
Right.
No. The episode's ending before we meet Orson because he flipped the blanket.
No.
It didn't get to that point.
It would be something totally. Like he would go to flip the blanket, and as he flipped the blanket, it would hit the light switch. So there you go.
So we still don't know.
Yeah.
Or you flip the blanket, and there's a duvet cover underneath. You flip the duvet cover, and there's a sheet. Oh, dang. All right. Jay, I'm going to give you the same episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm terrified to give you Colin Baker, so I'm going to re-roll. I just couldn't even... Oh, okay, here we go. Patrick Troughton.
Ooh.
Yeah, think this one through, because this is going to require... It's going to definitely change the dynamic with Clara.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to dramatically change his interaction with Orson Pink, because he absolutely loves when he crosses paths with scientists and space travelers. I'm using big finger quotes here. Finds that quite endearing, charming almost.
Let's see. I definitely think that the... All right, so let's jump ahead. He would absolutely do the monologue at the beginning, but it wouldn't even seem out of character. He would just be sitting there talking to himself, and the only time that you would notice that anything was out of the ordinary is when he stops and looks at the camera before the credits roll, or before the title sequence okay. rolls. That's the only thing that would make it seem odd, because it's Patrick Troughton. He'd do that anyway. Dealing with the blanket object.
Mm-hmm.
He would be terrified, and you could tell that, but you could also tell he was trying very hard to put a brave face on it and and act like he had everything under control.
I can't wait to get that classic stammer. Great.
So
tries to charm it with a little recorder tune, like a little snake in a basket.
No, the recorder would come out when he's trying to calm down Danny.
Let me play you a little song from my youth.
Right, and he'd start trying to play him a lullaby or something, and it would all come out wrong, and he'd bluster a little bit and then put the recorder away and then return to the matter at hand.
Right.
So that he would play it the same way. He'd turn his back and let whatever it is wander away. We'll jump forward to dealing with Orson Pink.
Okay.
And yes, he would absolutely try and have fun with the fact that this person was a space traveler.
Oh, so you travel through space, do you? Ooh.
And the fact that he got flung so far into the future and is completely out of his element would just seem like poetic justice for the bravado that it would take to try and travel through time for a lowly human.
That's what you get for being in the British space program.
And then the pounding on the door starts, and they'd go into the TARDIS, and you'd see the Second Doctor turn around and look out, and that moment of I want to know, but is it really worth it? And it would drag on for just long enough, and he would slam the door shut, run over the consoles, and they take off.
Just, yeah, make sure you spin a lot of film out for that last moment. Okay, I like it.
Yeah.
All right. I think we've got the time. We good for one more round, you think?
Yeah, we got one more in us.
Okay. All right. Threw this one in here because I thought this would be kind of a fun opportunity to play a lot of different dynamics off, because you had so much going on in the episode. From this most recent series, we'll take the second part of the opening salvo, The Witch is Familiar.
Ooh.
So Stephen Moffat's pen, Hattie McDonald directing, you've got Missy, you've got the TARDIS, Clara, they're all in jeopardy as far as the episode opens up. You got Davros involved, you got a room full of Daleks. Room full of Daleks is the name of some cover band I haven't worked out to quite yet. And he has none of his usual trappings to get him through this this dilemma on all sides. There's enemies aplenty to deal with. So, Haley, I'm going to give you roll for familiarity. I give it a +6 modifier to help you out. Okay. Well, you know what? I think I've handed this one to you once before, but I think you might be able to handle this one. I think this would actually be kind of interesting to put David Tennant back into the mix.
Oh, yes. I was hoping for this.
So here's some things to deal with, and bear in mind. So you've got to deal with Tennant and Clara.
Okay.
He's going to need Missy's stick to beat her off, because she's going to be all over him like white on rice. You got Missy to deal with. phenomenal dynamic you got going on there. And you got him dealing with Davros, which we've, you know, we've handled before. Okay, but now we've got that idea of the you know, that kind of a evolution of the Daleks. You know, could you take them all out if you had the opportunity? Kind of a moral quandary.
Okay, so I feel like at this point, let's assume that this has been Clara's doctor for a while, because, you know, she'd had her doctor for a while at this point. So the flirtation has passed.
Wait, you think there would be an end to the flirtation?
And now she's just making fun of his hair.
Okay. Coquettishly.
All right, so then... Where does the episode start? Okay, so the episode starts, the second episode started with him captured by Davros, right?
Oh, right. They're having their okay. They spend a good part of this episode having their breakdown, you know, their battle of wits while Missy and Clara were off fighting with a stick.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So it's going to be a while before she can make fun of him for his hair.
Yeah.
Because they're separated for a good bit.
Right.
But that would absolutely be the first thing that she said when she sees him again.
Do what?
That would absolutely be the first thing she would say when she sees him again. It would be some comment about his hair.
Okay. I see they didn't torture the spikiness out of your hair.
Turn the volume down on that.
But I do feel he would have his on the verge of tears face the entire time he's having the conversation with Davros.
Oh, he'd be bawling. Verge of tears.
Verge of tears.
The moment that tear falls from Davros' eye, oh, the two of them would just be hugging it out. Going to get some TCBY together.
Braiding each other's hair. Oh, wait a second.
No hair on Davros. Braiding their wires. Making friendship bracelets. It'd be a very touchy-feely episode. Seriously, you guys.
Seriously, guys. And then at the end, he pokes him in the eye.
There would have to be some sort of a he'd have to pull some toy from his pocket to give him one poke in the eye, right?
Yep, yep.
All right. Jay, I'm going to give you the same scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I've already given you Patrick Trout. Oh, okay. Peter Davidson. So Ooh. The kind-hearted, loving, fatherly.
Yeah.
School teacherly.
Ooh.
Teacherly? Okay. That's a word now. I just said it, and it's on the internet.
All right, let's see. Peter Davidson. Let's think. So all of the interactions between Davros would be gentle, but on the verge of strained. So okay. a lot of pleading with some underlying anger, nothing overt, because, you know, it's Peter Davison.
Right. But the wounds are still fresh.
Yes.
Obviously coming off the fourth doctor. So, yep.
The interactions with Missy would be much more, it would be much more like a teacher scolding a troublesome pupil.
Yeah, but the trouble is you've got a pupil that's probably brighter than the teacher. You've got the troublemaker in the back of the class who just happens to also be the smartest kid in the class.
Which
I think she'd eat him for breakfast.
Right, but he would try. He would try and maintain his composure the entire time. But you could tell it was wearing on him. But he didn't know quite how to respond to it. So he just keeps on with what he does. Clara would definitely take the big sister role. She would be very protective over the doctor.
Okay.
So anytime that Missy said anything disparaging about the doctor, Clara would instantly jump to his defense. The final conclusion with Davros and the tear, the doctor would absolutely jump on it and say that he was reformed, that he would want to believe that Davros had turned over a new leaf.
It become like a tent revival all of a sudden. You know, congregation starts singing. Yeah, okay.
Then the whole thing with the wires would play out, and then we see that Davros is actually evil and has orchestrated this whole thing. And and the doctor would then kind of hang his head and be like, "I was hoping that this part wouldn't come into play," and then it would play out exactly the same way. But the doctor would feel bad about it because he really didn't want it to make it that far into the scheme.
Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see those scenes back on the battlefield with Davidson dealing with the child Davros.
Yeah.
That'd be him in his element, you know, that kind of come with me, I'm here to protect you, kind of reaching out, sort of a gesture. But also, playing to his strong suits, Peter Davison took physical abuse like no other doctor. So having him caught in the wires and everything and getting, you know, all the essence drained from him like the object of torture in The Princess Bride, would be perfect for him because he could just throw himself back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
And wail and scream and make all of his painful faces that he loved to do. Yeah, I'd buy into that. Classic.
Very, very much so, yeah.
Well, tallied up the points that I wasn't keeping through this entire thing, and it's a dead heat, but because of the fact that she was able to struggle through doctors that she wasn't that familiar with, I'm going to give this game to Haley.
Woo!
So
you get a fancy new toaster.
I like the idea of doing these occasional games to kind of mix things up a little bit.
Absolutely.
Put you two in the hot seat a little bit, but I'm willing to take some abuse in the weeks ahead, so we'll make sure that I may prep a couple game formats and just hand the reins over to one of the two of you to moderate or facilitate, and then I'll jump in too. But we'll have definitely have to come back to this one. I would love to have for listeners, if they have, we didn't get a chance to have any opportunities to use Sylvester McCoy in any of these. So if you've got for any of the episodes that we touched upon, or I should say stories that we touched upon, Witch is Familiar, Listen, Dinosaurs in a Spaceship, The Lodger, Fires of Pompeii, Tooth and Claw, or all the way back to Father's Day, if you wanted to just toy around with the idea, treat it like a little fanfic exercise. Yeah,
absolutely. Send us your ideas. Doctor of your choice. You don't even have to do it randomly if you don't want to. Just choose your doctor to insert into any one of those stories and let us know how you think it would play out, because I can't wait to read some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, are we ready to jump into the news?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right, so what do we got in the news tonight?
Well, you can put at least half of your pitchforks and torches away. Because
is that the pointy half or
like,
the handle half?
Well, I don't know. Well, the news is, and this is just actually circulating as we're recording today, mm-hmm. that Amazon Prime will take their video streaming service and have 8 seasons of Modern Who to stream to their subscribers. How they managed it, or what precedent this sets for what may be going back to the negotiation tables with the other major streaming services, is yet to be determined. But this is at least an unlocking of the door, even if the door has not yet opened.
Yeah, there's an avenue.
Right. I don't know if this is as a result of general public outcry. If it was, bless you all for crying out loud as much as you did.
Is this on their service that you get for free with Prime, or is it where you can buy the episodes?
I'm not entirely certain. I'll have to look through. I only had one take on the official PR, but as it came through Mary Sue. But I know
it looks like it's part of the subscription.
Okay, so there you go. So if you're already a Prime user. Yeah, then you're gonna have your access to these 8. And of course, obviously, it's being the 8 because the 9th has not yet cooled enough off of its DVD sales and iTunes and similar subscriptions to be available yet.
Well, and I will say, historically, what's ended up on Amazon Prime is stuff that's only available on Amazon Prime. That's usually what they like to have, is stuff that's exclusive to them. And they've had some BBC America shows before that were only available to stream there. There were a couple sci-fi shows that only they had.
They may have been able to strike a deal where it was actually more cost-effective for BBC to license to them. Maybe they were willing to pony up a little bit more because they're getting a lot more aggressive within the streaming market and taking a greater market share. Or it could just be that they were the first ones to come to the table and the BBC is finally coming to their senses. So we'll see. Because there have been no other news items out there with regards to what they're doing with their streaming platform that we were theorizing was in development. Nothing's emerged. So this is the best ray of hope we've had yet.
Absolutely. Yeah, so you're going to have to convince people to get Amazon Prime if they don't already, but at least there is now a way to get people to watch Doctor Who. So,
yeah.
And I don't know if this is still the case. They used to give students a year for free and then half off after that.
I think they might have done away with the free initial year. Okay. But I think it's discounted like 3 months rate for now. Anyone with an EDU, or there are a couple of other qualifying domains as well. So I think it might be government contracts and things like that too. So Prime, it's completely off topic, but I mean, I will sing its praises because we buy damn near 50% of everything that we consume within the household through Prime stuff. So it kind of pays for itself rather quickly. But if this is going to be an alternative to maybe a Hulu subscription, if you were getting Hulu primarily for your Doctor Who content or something of that sort, or if it looks like you might be able to get the vast majority of what you were getting from... I'm not telling you to jump ship from Hulu. I'm really not, but I am, but I'm not. So... something for you to weigh out on a household by household basis. And we'll see, because this may be something where within about a month's time, we're talking about the dramatic return to the other platforms as well.
But at least this is something in that general direction. So it's a move in the right way. So.
Quite. Yep.
Right. Well, then we've got a news article about Jovian Wade, who our beloved Riggsy has decided to talk about possibly being a full-time companion.
Well, all right. The reason why I wanted to include this here, because this isn't just a matter of just yet another person jumping forward and saying, oh, you know, if anybody asked, I'd love to be a companion. And then for a whopping 36 hours,
the internet the headlines explodes.
Read, yep. You know, yeah. But at least this is someone who's earned their stripes on the program, has earned a fan base, legitimately, has grown as a character. Through a lot of trial by fire, for the character, not for the actor. Doing extremely well within the EastEnders series that he's currently involved with. He's a well respected and recognized character within that soap. So he's got cred and chops and experience. So already standing a good head, if not head and shoulders, above a lot of these other. You know, kind of flash in the pan news stories that go around that say, oh, well, you know, if they asked me, I'd love to be a companion. Or worse still, oh, yeah, if they asked me, I'd certainly play the doctor, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, if they wanted me the doctor, I suppose I could.
I'd have to look at my schedule, but yeah.
Yes. So it's good to know. I mean, he treats it with a great amount of reverence. You know, he mentions repeatedly through his statements about what an honor and what a privilege it is to be in any way involved with the program, even if it is just in a very small capacity role. But to be tapped for something larger is just that lifetime opportunity. So he's treating this with all of the reverence that such a role may offer.
Yeah, that we would want a potential companion to have for the show.
Yeah. By all means.
But the only problem I see with that is the backstory that they gave him with the family and with the child and things like that. And I don't see that playing well with jump in the TARDIS and run away for, you know, X amount of time.
Unless this is an opportunity where you have a companion who is on again, off again.
But we just had that with Clara.
Well, no. I mean, on isn't like there for two episodes and then gone.
Okay.
For two, three, four episodes.
So just not have a regular companion for a while and have him be one of the people that pops in a few times.
Precisely. He's kind of like the I'm not going to say a fallback, but as far as who is considered the resident companion. But there are, you know, alternate week or what have you kind of visiting companions. That sounds dirty. Never mind.
Special guest companion, Missy.
Bananas.
All right. So what's our next news article that we've got here?
Well, this was just something that came across. There was the, I forget what the con was. It was a Magic Con, whatever was going on in Portland, here in the States, just recently. Had an attendee at the con, a teenage girl, 13 years of age, who actually kind of posed the question, or somehow came up in the nature of questioning for Matt Smith, who is now starting to do more con appearances, which is great. We might finally have our opportunity to chat with him yet.
Mm-hmm.
And basically admitted to him, I'm not a watcher of Doctor Who. All my friends are watching Doctor Who. Why should I bother watching this program? Well, he gives an answer that is, I'll let everybody kind of experience it for themselves. It is not a good argumentative answer. On paper, it is one of the dumbest replies, but the fact that he gave it right back to her as a 13-year-old American girl won it. Absolutely crushed it. Because he said, I was about this guy, and he travels in a big blue box, and he goes through time, and he gave it right back to her in exactly the same tone that she threw the snarky question at him. So it was a perfect return to that blistering serve, you know, that wasn't expected. So definitely worth the opportunity to enjoy through that one.
And then the last thing that we wanted to bring up is, as Kier mentioned, we're having fun playing some games as we span the long, long amount of time until we get new Doctor Who. So one of the game topics that we have come up with is a nice little game we've lovingly dubbed Family Who'd.
The Family Who'd.
So what we need for this game to function is our survey of random participants. So if you can go to the show notes at GallifreyPublicRadio.com/176, go to the show notes, click on the link there, and take our survey. It's, what is it, 12 questions, I think?
Yeah, about 12 questions. Most of the folks who have taken so far, we've had a couple dozen entries through, because originally I'd been doing it through Twitter and Facebook, and people were sending direct messages or emails to us, and I was just sending the questions out that way. And I figured, you know what? This is the internet. There's got to be an easier way to do this.
So and there was.
In retrospect, sorry to everyone who tweeted me or sent me Facebook messages going, could I have the questions, please? And when I thought to look at my phone and could paste 12 questions back to you, I'm really sorry. Really sorry. I should have done this from the get-go, but I've been a little busy. So, all right. So I put together the questionnaire. It's the 12 questions. They're all simple text answers. And they're all, yeah, I mean, you've seen Family Feud. If you haven't seen Family Feud, if you're watching from the UK or if you're listening from the UK or anything, it's a real simple. You might actually have a variant of the program over there.
Hell, we probably got it from you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to let us know. We probably stayed somewhere back there in the 70s. But we put the big board up. We surveyed 100 Whovians. And the top, you know, blah, blah answers are up on the board. And name an actor who has portrayed the Doctor. And someone buzzes in and says, Peter Cushing's.
Show me Peter Cushing's.
And they'll say, eh, because no one answered that out of 100 people. So, sorry. But that's the same rules as Family Feud. We're just playing Family Feud. But we need to have, obviously, the survey of 100 Whovians. So we're just going to keep culling them together. And as soon as I hit 100 and I've got the numbers, I'm going to sit there and compile data for a weekend. And then that night we will play around. I might even create little cartoon versions of the board to hold up in front of the video screen for Jay and Haley.
Are we going to have our sonic screwdrivers to use as buzzers?
Yes. I was actually fretting that as I was falling asleep last night. I was really comfy. You know, it's getting kind of quiet. I'm getting into my, you know, perfect comfy spot in the bed. And as just as I'm about to drift off to sleep, I'm like, how the hell are they going to buzz in? Oh, and it just woke me back up. I had to figure it out. But there you go. Sonic screwdrivers.
Dibs on the war,
you're
going
to have ones that have different tones so I can differentiate them,
please.
Oh,
if only we had choices.
Oh. Yeah, really.
Fair. All right, time to go look at Rubber Toe Replica, see if they're putting those out yet.
Oh, I actually talked with the guys from Rubber Toe when we were at Galley last weekend. Because obviously their principal designer was the guy who came up with the design and the specs for the current one. So it's a matter of them working on being able to make marketable replicas. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because they've supplied the studio with the ones that they're using for film production, and now it's a matter of making the replicas. The thing weighs a ton. it is freaking heavy.
You could bludgeon somebody to death with it.
Yeah, because I was holding one of the, because they said it was basically as far as total mass weight, it wasn't, it's obviously considerably longer than the Master's laser screwdriver, but has about the same amount of total metallic mass. Damn, that thing's heavy. So when, like, when it's, like, flinging through the air, you know, when the TARDIS expels it.
It's going to break a finger if you try and catch it.
Yeah, he's going to have like, a wide stance because the recoil when he catches that thing. So this is going to be interesting. When it finally gets put into the hands of the toy replicators to make this thing out of die-cast plastic, lots of luck, guys.
This is going to be a hell of a challenge. Not to mention just the lighting effects and that alternating light pattern around the nose of it. So, have a nice time. But it's going to be at least, I believe, 2 to 3 months before you can purchase a extremely costly official replica from Rubber Toe.
But they have been teasing it on their Facebook and things like that, that it is coming. They're getting the mailing list ready to start adding people. And yeah, so pay attention to all their different social medias because the stuff is coming.
Yeah. I had passed on all the Universal TV remotes before. I didn't really want those because also I would love to have one where I could enter a quick code and use it on all the TVs around the house. But so I could just... No matter what room I'm sitting in, I'm like, okay, it's the living room code, and I can boo mess with it, and I'll go into the bedroom and woo, or the game room or whatever. But this one, I would spring for because it's sexy.
All right. Well, this has been episode 176 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I want to see the 12th Doctor in Gunslingers.
You've heard him sing. Come on, you've heard the clips out there, you know. He'd sort of give it a punk tune.
Exactly.
Punk country. And this is Gear saying, I'm going to take what's in the box. Okay, I'm going to take what's behind the box. Okay, you can keep the $1,500. I want what's in the box.
And this is Haley saying, let's look at the board. Show me Christopher Lloyd. 2 points. Woo.
Aw.
We'll see you guys next week.
Allons-y.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook @facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2016.
Normally, at this point, I say, hey, Jay, if you want me to edit this episode for you.
So, Kier, what are you doing for the next, like, 5 hours?
Did I mention I've got stuff to do?
Expect this episode to hit the internet sometime in mid-April.
Yeah. Oh, I will race to the market faster than Crimson Comet.
Oh, meta humor.
I love you, Haley. You're so pretty. She's lost her audio. Even better. Of course, it's going to show up on her recording, so she'll be saying all these horrible things that we can't hear.
Oh, God.
I can't wait to listen to the After Dark to find out what horrific...
I know. This is going to be a freaking nightmare.
I have to know to stop talking now when I see her mouth moving.
Oh, man.
So, hey, last X-Files episode tonight.
Yeah, you're on your own on that one.
Well, I got that. I got all kinds of crap. I got that. I've got, what was it? Walking Dead from last night. Still haven't watched that. Lego Star Wars is back.
That's right. Forgot about
but they're
that.
Only, they're really short. They're like 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just little clips.
Yeah, that's just weird. Yeah. Okay. Well, so be it. And, what the hell have we been consuming so much of lately? Julie doesn't watch Arrow, but I was actually, I'll chime in. I will actually chime in on Crimson Comet this week. I will send feedback. Well, grab what you want out of the, what I put in the general group discussion, because I had a problem with this past episode.
I saw that.
Yeah. I wish Haley could fix her audio right now so we could hear what she's talking about. Not to steamroll and like take over GPR After Dark to talk about Flash, but it was bugging me, you know?
I'm back, bitches.
Yes, there's her audio. But it was like, this was the two seasons of this show now that had just been kind of rock solid. This last episode felt so weak. Just from a writing perspective, it just seemed like really crappy writing. I don't know. Badger tried to talk me off the ledge on it, but it didn't win. He was not successful because I still found it poo.
I feel like they used like a lot of the coolness of the episode as a crutch, and there wasn't a lot of story there.
Yeah. Because
like the style of everything was awesome.
Right. But there were not continuity issues, but there were like weak spots in the explanatory nature of the script. Why were people doing and saying what they were doing that didn't quite jive? Zoom was the most opportunistic villain possible. I'm going to leave the room until you devise your plan, and then I'm coming back. Boom.
Well, and okay. They've kind of weakened Zoom in the last couple episodes, because he went from being this, you know, dangerous, imposing speed vampire thing to now he's not actually the one that can take people's speed. You know, right. Jay lost his all on his own, and he had to use Wells to help him get berries. So it's like, what can he really do?
Yeah, I really have no clue what you guys are talking about. I'm like a week or two behind.
How many episodes? So,
just like one or two, I think. Like,
okay.
Barry and Cisco are stuck on Earth 2. Like, that was the last episode I saw.
You got to Earth 2.
Yeah.
Okay. No, you're just
one behind.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep up. Legends of Tomorrow? Yeah, that one I'm struggling with. Like, not able to keep up on that one.
I paused on that one because I got through it far enough to know, thank Crom, they killed Hawkman. And that gave me enough promise to say, well, maybe if they systematically get rid of some of the other characters that I don't enjoy and maybe bring some others on or something, we'll get down to a core team that I can actually
enjoy. I've said all I really want from the show, because I think it's the best part, is for them to just take Sarah and the Rogues and have them go to bars in different periods of time and get in bar fights.
Yeah, kick ass in period costumes. Needs. Yeah.
Have you felt, I've seen a lot of criticism about the multi-tiered fight scenes where it's eight different fights going on at once and it's just sort of an audiovisual overload and it's going to, they're going to hit a fatigue point.
Here's the thing. I kind of don't pay that much attention when I watch this show. So I look up and I was like, okay, there's a fight going on. And then I'm back down playing whatever phone game I've got going on.
Right. Pocket Mortys. I'm all about Pocket Mortys right now.
I'm just, it's very interesting to me. The only thing that really holds my interest in the show is watching Rory play the Doctor.
Yeah. He's a really crappy Doctor.
He really is.
They steamroll right over him.
Every single
time. No authority. Yeah.
No, guys, seriously, I'm in charge.
I'm the captain, guys. I'm the captain. You stole the
captain.
Ship.
I'm a captain, too.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's I definitely think that one's going to be one I catch up on the off season.
I'm waiting for them to have an episode where they take Ray to a bar.
Oh, God.
And get him.
And he gets the crap kicked out of him.
Poop faced. No, I want to see him blasted. I want him sheets drunk.
You haven't watched the latest episode, right?
No.
They get him arrested and thrown in the gulag.
Oh, God. How is it that with that cast of characters, how does the Boy Scout get thrown in jail?
It's their master plan. So we've got Heatwave and Ray in jail.
Oh, God.
And Ray, right. Heatwave is just like, dude, don't shake his hand. Don't talk to him. Like, trying to teach him how to not get his ass kicked in prison, and it's just not sinking in.
Hi, I'm Ray.
It's exactly like that.
You guys want to be bunk mates? I call top bunk.
I really feel like Ray is just a less charismatic version of Captain America in an Iron Man suit. In a Kmart version Iron Man suit.
I don't know.
One of the key plot points was that a chunk broke off of his suit.
Yeah,
that was, when the fact that, you know, you're a genius, but you don't understand product design.
But, you know, this is a guy who has, you know, Steve Jobs his way into being the richest man on the planet.
Well, at this point now, you know, they're trying to stop Vandal Savage, and they have accidentally allowed him to reverse engineer two of the superheroes on the team.
Oh yeah, that's gotta love CW. Cap.
Are they improving? Like the Vandal Savage character. You know me. I'm always about multifaceted and depth of character on villains.
No.
And he doesn't seem it.
No.
That's yeah. He's exactly the same
character he's been. He loves her, but he'll kill her so he can be immortal.
Yeah, they need to throw something else in there to make his angle more compelling than just that drive, I think.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Just my two bits.
No, I haven't been able to keep up on many shows, but one thing I have watched repeatedly is Deadpool.
Have you seen it twice?
I've seen it twice now.
All right, I'm gonna see it again this week. Probably catch. I love this little freaking movie theater in our town. Freaking love it. Everyone has given up on it because when it was between management, it sat fallow for like 18 months because the previous owners, like, they bought it and they were using it it wasn't a flip opportunity, but they weren't paying their staff, they weren't paying the rent, they weren't paying anything, and they were just basically taking in the proceeds and they disappeared to Miami or something. So it sat there for 18 months, and everybody in town wrote it off and said, no, never again, boo. And this little company came in. They only own 3 movie theaters, one here, one in Rhode Island, and one in, like, Vermont. And they said, all right, we're just going to make a nice little family movie theater. We're just going to hire the local high school kids, you know, pay them a little better than they expected so that they actually enjoy
which
coming to work.
Which is Edible, I guess.
Yeah. And they charge, you can see a 3D flick for $8, a regular screen flick for $6 any time of day. Nice. So it's basically matinee pricing all day and weekends as well. So the only caveat is that weeknights they only do, you know, for whatever, their 10 screens or something, they do maybe 2 screenings a night per screen. So they only do like a 4 o'clock and a 7 o'clock or a 5 and an 8 or something like that. So they can let the high school kids get back home by a decent... They're actually thinking about their employees.
Yeah.
And then the weekends, it's, you know, the full rotation one. But, I mean, opening weekend, we went to go see... How was it? I think it was The Martian on opening weekend. And we were only one of 20 people in the theater because the town... Like, half the town doesn't know that they reopened. And the other half is just too thick-headed or stubborn to give them a dollar, you know. And everything, from the way they run concessions to the way they run the ticket booth to the staff to everything else in between, it's like, this is a really charming little theater. So I'm going to go back. And knowing that I can, because I paid way too much to see Deadpool the first time. We were out in L.A. We went to the...
Oh, yeah. It was like $18.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, at the Arclight, which is a beautiful theater. I mean, God, it was stunning. I spent the first 10 minutes just looking at the ceiling. But, well, actually, no, because once the movie started, I was locked. But for the 10 minutes before the movie started, I was focusing. But yeah, for that, I could go see it 2 to 3 times here in town.
I pay $350 for a ticket to my movie theater.
What?
$350.
How does that...
It's
Are you passing yourself
price.
Off as 10?
Yes. No, I'm claiming to still be a student.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Or if you go before 6 o'clock, it's only $350. But yeah,
that's one of the drawbacks of being in a you know, decent sized city. Yeah, I don't have cheap theaters, like, or I do, but you don't want to go to that side of town because
Stabby Town.
Won't you take Stabby Town?
No, but I've gone to see it twice now. I grabbed my coworker one day. I was like, hey, you're waking up early. We're going to go see this movie before work tonight. Let's go. And then it became the entire night was just quoting the movie constantly. Yeah. I'm so incredibly thrilled with it.
Yeah. So that's, we'll have to make sure that we catch that at least a couple more times over the next week or so. I will not be back next week, obviously. You kids can record on Monday for whatever the heck.
Wait, you got something going on next week or something?
Yeah, I'm going to be in New Orleans. This time, next week, I'll be in New Orleans.
And also Hitched.
And Hitched. So I will have, I will be on, my hotel is on Bourbon Street. Whoopee! How can you possibly go wrong? I kept my bail money in a small envelope in my carry-on bag.
Don't put it in your pants.
You don't understand, Ossifer.
All right, I'm just going to say, it is like a 12-hour drive from here, so give me heads up before I have to come and bail your ass out of jail.
Got it. We'll do. It's good. Actually, well, no, the in-laws' family is, well, is it closer for, it's closer for them. They'd be coming from Tampa.
Okay, yeah, that's closer.
By about an hour.
Yeah, but
he's got military clearance, so he could probably speed.
Once they learn why you got thrown in jail, then you can call me.
If it's indecent exposure in a museum where they already have nudes, is that really, really such a violation? I thought
just
it was
be like,
an immersion.
No, it's like a live art piece.
I'm part of the installation.
It's performance art, dang it.
Made it spin.
Would you like me to perform for you? Ow, don't tase me. Not there.
Oh, God. Whatever happened to Don't Tase Me, Bro?
Don't Tase Me, Bro.
I don't know what happened to Don't Tase Me, Bro. I think he got his doctorate.
That would, yeah, that sounds about right.
In electrical engineering. Wow, an audible head slap from Haley. We have a new intro sound. And Haley Malley.
Oh, God. All right. I'm a little bit punch drunk. We need to wrap this crap up. We're going on way too long.
All right.
We'll be back next week.
Some of us.
Bye.
Yeah. Peace out.
What are we doing next week?